Show with Dave and Logan on 960 The Ref and 960theref.com.
All right, it's the second half kickoff here for the morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. Dave and Logan along with you. Good Monday morning to you. Where we are sitting right now at 37 degrees, supposed to get up to about 61 today. We do have some rain moving in this afternoon. Tomorrow's high 70. Wednesday 66, Thursday 66. And then Friday, you know what that is?
Opening day.
Opening day for Georgia baseball. Sunny and 51. And Saturday, sunny and 48.
Well, at least you said sunny. I would have taken 61, but I'll take sunny over
Absolutely.
Everything.
Absolutely. All right, time to bring in our man Mike Griffith from DogNation.com. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing great, guys.
Excellent. Hope you had a good weekend. And want to get right into something. You know, we talked with Chip Towers about this last week to an extent. His was more of the budget stuff that was going on and that kind of thing. You've got a good story right now. Basically, not as much the budget, but Georgia and its facility construction and what's going on next to the House of Pain and the indoor practice facility. But this is quite a project. Not that we didn't already know that, but then when you start seeing some pictures of it, start reading your stuff about the scope of it, very, very impressive. But what I wanted to ask you is to explain to people that may not keep up with it as closely as you do and other people that are in this business, what the arms race has come to and how a school like Georgia that's been so successful still has facilities that are in the conference, would you say are middle of the pack, right?
Well, I mean, 24/7 ranked them eighth. I mean, you think about it. There's seven other SEC schools with better football facilities than Georgia, including Kentucky. I mean, just think about that for a second. Kentucky has better football facilities than Georgia.
I know, that's hard to imagine.
Well, it has to do with what you're willing to invest in the program. And, you know, I think Georgia, when they hired Kirby Smart, I think they recognized that more needed to go into it. And Kirby's got a vision, you know. And I was talking with Craig McGarity about that this weekend. And, you know, McGarity works really well with Kirby. And that's just so key. It's so important that your athletic director and your football coach are partners and they work together. And McGarity says it's great when you got a guy like Kirby with a vision, you know, that knows how it should be, how it could be. It makes it so much easier for administrators. You know, it used to be you had the former football coach would just move up into that. That doesn't happen anymore because football coaches make enough money that they can retire, right? So largely that's become, you know, a marketing position. Now McGarity obviously has some, you know, athletics in his background, so he has an idea of what he's looking for with his coaches and things like that. But the football dynamic is completely different, and he's as much a partner of Kirby Smart. And so you put somebody, you know, like Greg with Kirby, and now it's a matter of getting the money together, you know, because Georgia, you know, does a really good job with their finances. They're way ahead of other schools in that respect. Other schools have so much debt, put so much on the fans. You know, Georgia really doesn't do that. It's a very fiscally responsible athletic department. And they're in position now in a couple of years where they will be caught up. You know, the 18th in the country is where their facilities rank, 8th in the SEC. And yet Georgia recruits and wins in spite of that. So just imagine what type of dynasty you could have once the facilities catch up and Kirby is on an equal playing field in recruiting.
So what was the number on this? Is it about $80 million? Is that what they're saying? Is that right? And then
yeah, about 160,000 square feet, new weight room. And you're right. You put it right. It's an arms race. And I think that's something that gets lost in this pay the athlete thing. Listen, these guys are in state-of-the-art facilities. They're fed 24/7. I mean, if you want to be an NFL player, you've got a red carpet to the league in terms of the health care that you receive, the dietitians on staff, the food, not to mention the value of the education and the degree, where if football doesn't work out, you can have a good career, a six-figure career. You get a degree from Georgia's business school. I mean, man, that'll travel.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, and I see both sides on that too, but it is crazy when you see the money that schools are getting from like from the SEC, and then you see the money, because I was going to say $80 million for this, $30 million for the indoor facility, $60-something million for the west end zone. That's a lot of millions right there.
It sounds like a lot, you know, but you know, you put $80 million, you say, "Wow, well, Georgia's spending $80 million." Guess what? Nebraska's spending $155 million.
And, you know, I saw where you had that in there, and it got me to thinking, it's like, for Nebraska to spend $155 million on something like that, is that even, you know, fiscally responsible on their part? I mean, that is...
if it's their boosters,
I mean, yeah, you're right. They could spend whatever they want, I guess. I mean, yeah, it just seems like
the McGill Society is doing it for Georgia.
Yeah.
So if you've got your booster, you know, because that's what a lot of these schools have. I mean, let's face it, you know, your facilities mean everything. Your boosters mean everything. You know, boosters kind of somehow got a negative connotation somewhere along the way, but really boosters are the ones boost, you know, prop up. I mean, you know, what's next for baseball? You know, Georgia baseball looking for what? Their first ever 3 straight NCAA tournament appearances this year, David, is that right? I mean, if they can do that, you know, you've got a great situation down there to field, but, you know, not enough seats. Something's got to happen too.
Yeah. Something, you're right. Something eventually is going to have to change, whether they want to do what they're doing at the current location or find somewhere else where there is more room. And you mentioned Kentucky. It's funny. That new baseball stadium they built that they played in last year for the first time, holy cow, it's just as nice in a different way, but it's as nice as just about anyone out there. So, I mean, they've definitely committed a lot of money to their facilities, and you know, that's one thing that everyone else is having to do with all of this.
Mike, I did see in your article the project they're working on now, the $80 million upgrade, the facility, supposed to be finished by January 2022. Do you know if this is going to be, like, invasive at all? Will they have to bus somewhere else to practice? Or are they sort of building this thing around where they can still stay where they are right now in terms of locker rooms and everything?
Yeah, they can stay where they're at. And they did lose one – they lost the north practice field, mm-hmm. but they still have the indoor facility and the outdoor. And they did a lot of that last year. They would rotate between indoor and outdoor as much as Kirby likes working in the heat. And taking advantage of that, you know, he also likes productive practices, and I think what he would do last year would rotate the offense and defense between the air-conditioned mm-hmm. indoor and the outdoor. So they did lose the upper turf field where we would always see the kickers work in, and they lost the north field that was closer to Lumpkin. They should be back, I believe, is that April of 2021? I think the building is done April of 2021. And then the completion of the entire project, because they have to do some renovation work on Butts Mears, it's going to open up into that building. I think the whole thing is done like January 2022. But yeah, they'll lose a practice field, but I'm sure there's a contingency plan, or certainly I don't think they have to bus anywhere.
Got it. Something that a lot of elite recruiting programs' fan bases are guilty of, and I'm throwing Georgia fans right in the mix here. When National Signing Day rolls around and you see that Georgia or another school picked up a 3-star commit, they sort of kind of roll their eyes and say, what are we doing wasting our time on this 3-star guy? Well, Georgia got a kid named Cameron Kinney who you spent some time with over the last week. And after reading your article, Mike, I got to say this sounds like a really, really impressive kid. What can you tell us more about this offensive lineman from just up the road in Gwinnett County?
Well, I mean, first all you got to know is that Kirby Smart thinks he can play and thinks he's beneficial to the program. I mean, listen, Kirby loves a good story as much as the next guy, but if there's one thing you know about Kirby Smart, it's that everything he does is with a purpose. He doesn't do anything just to do it. There's no haphazard flag down interviews. There's no, let's just take this kid because he's in state. That's not how he works. I mean, he's a cutthroat guy that makes business decisions to win championships, and there's really, it's really black and white with him. There's really not much in between. So the fact that Kirby and his staff thought that Cameron was worthy of that
scholarship
tells you everything you need to know, number one. You know, two, I mean, he plays in the most competitive league in Georgia, and he's played against SEC talent the last 2 years and had success. He's moved to center. I think we've seen how valuable it is to have offensive line depth at Georgia, particularly this year. You know, the Great Wall never really lived up to its height, but remember, they only played that first game together, and then there was just a series of injuries, and Solomon Kinley was never himself again after the Notre Dame, after that Notre Dame game. Isaiah Wilson out with an ankle. I mean, we saw Ben Cleveland. I mean, they had injury after injury. You know, even the backups, you know, were getting injured. Justin Schaefer came in left guard. I thought he was playing great and played Kinley. Then he's out with a neck injury. So the fact is, you can't have enough depth on your offensive line, especially when you got a guy like Matt Luke that can put guys in the pros, has done it before at other schools, and you're not keeping these guys for 4 years. That's kind of what gets lost in translation here when you look at the Twitter trolls. And the Twitter trolls are kind of like the, you know, the silent negative people. You know, they hide behind fake screen names and they talk about, well, Georgia must not be good because they have all these great recruiting classes. They don't win. They have five or six underclassmen going pro every year. That's part of the equation, one. Two, when you play in the SEC and you beat on each other, it's not the same as playing in the ACC, you know, where guys are playing 2 and 3/4 games most of the year and you're able to develop depth because you're winning by 30 points after, you know, halftime. It's a different world in the SEC, so it's kind of all relative. It's like that facilities thing or like recruiting. So like the facilities thing, we say Georgia is 8th in the SEC in facilities, but they're 18th in the country, right? And you can see, like, I think Tennessee was celebrating. They were so excited about their recruiting class because they were, what, 9th in the – well, they were, like, 6th or 7th in the SEC. So what happens with Georgia is you've got to have layer upon layer of depth. We saw that cost them the SEC championship game in 2018 when DeAndre Walker went out with the injury. They didn't have a capable guy behind them. And they lost contain, and they lost that game because of depth. So you can never be deep enough. And Cameron is a guy, Cameron Kinney, getting back to your point from Collins Hill. I mean, here's a guy that's already 6'3", 307. He had offers to Air Force and Army. He's a 4.0 student, right? But he gets it done on the field, too. His dad played football at Jack State. You know, they get it. He's a program guy. He's going to be here 4 or 5 years, probably be a team captain. But you got to have guys like that, that are willing to grind, that are willing to get it done in the classroom, that you know you can count on. And that's why Georgia found them. And they think they found a diamond in the rough.
Before we let you go, as far as Georgia basketball goes, how would you tell folks to take a look at what's going on? Obviously, the last three losses, Georgia's had a double-digit lead in the second half. Is patience required, or is it one of these where – hey, it's a train wreck, or, you know, how are you looking at it?
Well, I mean, you know, Georgia's missing size. I mean, they, you know, the one guy they've got with size, you know, Rayshon Hammonds is just terribly inconsistent, doesn't play defense. I mean, it's just, he's a top 100 guy. Crane's working with him. You're not going to just cast him to the side. He's got talent, you know, but he's coming along. I mean, look, there's a reason he's at Georgia. There's a reason that he wasn't going somewhere else, folks, okay? Mark Fox wasn't getting the best of the best here. They got that, what, Yonte Mate, and that was it at a one-man show. But the fact of the matter is Crane is trying to change the culture. He's close. I mean, you know, you say they lost a double-digit lead. Well, they had a double-digit lead.
Exactly.
You know, they were winning by 20 at Florida. That says something. It says something. They were beating Alabama by 20. They just need to finish. And the other night, you know, Alabama, I mean, Anthony Edwards is playing with flu. I mean, the guy played 36 minutes sick, didn't even practice the day before. You know, they didn't even know if he was going to go. And he goes 36 minutes and, you know, gets another double-double, leads the team in rebounding. So you've got some young guys, Xavier Wheeler with 24. You've got some young guys, you can see it. You've seen Crean do it before. He's a fabulous coach. Georgia's really lucky to have him. You know, you look at Bruce Pearl, he had a losing record in the SEC his first 3 years there at Auburn. It takes time to change the culture. It takes time to build something at a football school like Georgia is. I mean, Auburn was the same way. And I covered Bruce at Tennessee. From start to finish, I was the Tennessee basketball beat writer. And I watched what happened there, and it was amazing. But when he took the Auburn job,
I remember thinking to myself, you can't do it there. He's going to kill himself. You cannot do it at Auburn. They hate basketball at Auburn. They built a brand-new basketball building, and they didn't put the suites at the top where you could look in. They put the suites at the bottom for tailgating in their basketball arena. And I said, that's what you're working with at Auburn. I said, it can't happen. And Bruce Pearl made it happen. Now, I thought the same thing here at Georgia, because I've come here as a visitor, you know, with other programs, and just thought, man, this Georgia basketball college culture is sad. It's awful. They're just bad. Georgia basketball is just bad. And the fans, some of the fans just hate it so much. They get mad when you talk about it. I'm turning it off. I'm going to quit reading. It's a bad basketball culture. But here comes Tom Crean, and here comes some money and some promotion. And now we're seeing games sold out. I think they've sold out every home SEC game so far. You're seeing the number five recruiting class in the country playing. You're seeing probably the number one or number two draft pick. You've got an entertaining product over there, okay? And it's not like football, where if you lose one game or two games or even five games, the season ain't over. You know, these guys can still get hot. They can still, there's still hope, right? I don't think that Georgia's going to make the NCAA tournament, but I do think they could make the NIT. And I do think they've had some good wins, beating Tennessee by 17 points, going on the road and beating a top 10 team. Only the second time in history, guys, that Georgia has won a road game against a ranked team. Think about that. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Only twice in Georgia basketball history, out of all those games, has Georgia basketball gone on the road and won a non-conference game against a top 25 opponent. That's how bad Georgia basketball has been for decades. And so Crean's come in, he's trying to fix it. It'll be interesting because they got another tough game Wednesday night. They're playing Frank Martin in South Carolina, and they just blistered A&M. So every game seems like a battle. And but these guys have been battling. They haven't cashed in yet. So that's, the thing I would say is they haven't cashed in, and you got Anthony Edwards playing 36 minutes with the flu. 105-102 against Alabama. It was a tough loss, but pretty entertaining game.
Mike, we appreciate it. Great stuff as always. We will obviously have a lot more to chat about next Monday. Thanks so much.
Look forward to it, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Mike Griffith from DogNation.com.